This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk Podcast, episode number 89. We are getting up there and I'm coming to you from Western Montana. I'm excited about this podcast because we've got a favorite back joining me today. Everybody asks me, sends the emails in, hey, would you ask John Bomber what he thinks about this? So I keep him pretty busy just answering your questions, the ones I think are viable as well. But from Southern California, we got John back. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Brian, thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it. How are you today? It's a glorious day out here in a gloomy June gloom. It's May, but June gloom, Southern California.
Yeah, you get the fog rolls in off the ocean, right?
It's really nice and cool. It's great for my plants. I can't complain.
We got nice and sunny weather. I like that. We're going to cool down a bit, but see, I want the sunshine. You want something cooler.
Yeah, absolutely. What's new?
Not a whole lot, just rocking away and rolling along. Episode 89 here. We're going to talk about what happens with the debt ceiling coming up. This is going to come out right before the deadline passes, but I want to urge everybody to like, subscribe, or comment on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Share it with your friends. Get this information out there. A lot of people find it very helpful. And if you can help us spread the message a little bit more, that would be appreciative. So, John, we're here and we don't necessarily have a plan for this, but the Washington Circus is moving right along, and we've got some bickering on both sides of the aisle talking about this stupid debt ceiling thing again. What do you think?
You got to love it. I look back at the volatility in the market going back to the debt ceiling. It always seems like they're going to kick the can down the road. They'll probably get a deal done at 24th hour. You know, last week in the equity markets, we had a, you know, kind of a rally on, hey, they're going to get a deal done, and ended up not being the case. I think they stalled out, what, Thursday, Friday. So we'll see. You know, you've got such polar opposite views on both sides of the aisle that I don't know when they're going to be able to come to a resolution for this, but it'll certainly, I don't think we should default on our debt. That would be pretty detrimental to global markets, but who knows? I mean, it could cause a lot of chaos, or on the flip side, could go pretty smoothly. We get something hammered out and kick it down the road a year. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, regardless, they're going to have to kick it down the road. I mean, that's the whole point of this thing, right?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I think they have a deal, and they're just, honestly, I'm pretty cynical about this, and you know that. I think they probably have a deal. It's all struck. And like you said, they're going to do it in the 24th hour, or they're going to let it stall for 7 days. Gives each side a chance to demonize the other side. Gives us something to argue about. So I just urge everyone, hey, if this affects you, you're not planned appropriately, write it out and let it go. It's probably not going to be that big a deal in the long run, because even if it gets done and when it gets done, the typical problems with currency, interest rates, market volatility are going to persist regardless of when this thing gets worked out.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that they're maybe kicking the can down the road, arguing about it so they can, you know, put a little extra fat in it. Couple pork projects here and there. I don't know.
Yeah, kickbacks, more money to Ukraine and tax breaks for campaign donors, all that stuff. I mean, that's why they're not making the deal, because, you know, you got, what, 535 people total or something like that. Everybody's got to get something. Well, if you want my vote, then you're going to have to send a bunch of money back to my district.
That's right. People forget Washington is a business. You know, no matter how you look at it, Washington is a business. You know, it's evident. How does a congressman or a congresswoman or a senator go in making, what, a couple $100,000 a year and 20 years later come out worth $100 million or $25 million? It's a business. Let's just put it that way.
And it doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on. I think they're both crooked. So it's not worth you and your neighbor arguing about, you know, who's right, who's wrong, or you or your friends. So I like to say, hey, you know, if you got somebody that sits on the opposite side of the aisle of you, philosophy-wise, shake their hand, give them a hug, tell them you love them.
Right.
Because that's more important than arguing about something that you can't control.
That's true. That's true. I had talked to a gentleman about a month ago, and he had a concern about the debt ceiling. So we, out of curiosity's sake, we went back and kind of did an exercise on the S&P 500 when, and I identified all the, I think going back to 2011, all the debt ceiling debates and how it affected the market. And I kind of put together a chart, showed him, was of interest to him. I thought it was of value to me as an exercise. But, you know, I can go through that later and show you how it's affected the market. But I think a lot of it's just, you know, real headline risk, a lot of posturing on both sides.
Yeah, and that was kind of what I was going to get to before I interrupt you. So I apologize and thank you for saying that. You know, what everybody wants to know is how is this going to affect markets? And to some extent, I have to think that a little bit of it's priced in already. But, and then, you know, just my naive point of view is that regardless of what happens, there's probably going to be some short-term shocks in the market. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the market right now, we've had a tremendous rally to start the year. Interestingly enough that, you know, maybe the top 20 stocks in the cap weighted index, the QQQ, NASDAQ, the S&P 500 have really driven the market higher. And you're seeing a lot of underlying damage to a lot of the rest of the market. I mean, I think last I looked, the S&P 500 was up about 8.5, call it, year to date, while the equal weighted S&P was only up about 2.25. So there's a lot of difference there. And a lot of that's being driven by, you know, your big tech, your mega cap tech, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Salesforce. A lot of those stocks have really, really run. And it's interesting. Apple, a couple weeks ago, reported earnings trading at 28 times the market, and they had a 3% year-over-year decrease in revenue. So it's just a flight to safety. It was interesting that 36% below their pandemic highs in terms of revenues, year-over-year decrease of 3%. iPhone sales have kind of slowed down, potentially heading into recession, but yet Apple is up 28% on the year. It's just totally mind-blowing. I think the valuations are totally stretched. The market is trading at 19 times earnings. It's about 5% above its historical average. I think the market's stretched, and we could get a potential pullback here, kind of at an inflection point. So yeah, I think adding to the debt ceiling, that's just going to add some fuel to the fire, you know, either up or down, and we'll see where it goes.
All right. And so, yeah, I mean, and a lot of people talk to me, of course, not, you know, anybody I've been working with for year, two, or 10, but, you know, I talk to new people all the time and they're getting, oh, what should I put in an annuity? And then again, it goes like what I talked about last week. You weren't there, but anybody who's a regular listener, you know, you define your goals first and whatnot, but not about annuities, but about what goes into the market. And I kind of think, that's what we talk to you about. That's what we have you on. Not necessarily a great time to dive headlong into it, but you got to have some professional advice, and you can't just blindly say, yeah, I'm going to put now 70% of my money in the market. You've got to have something that, you know, kind of aligns with goals and helps you get there. And then obviously have your safety in place so those short-term shocks don't hurt you. So,
yeah, I agree. I don't think right now, considering that we are coming off of, you know, a 20, 30% down year in the major market indexes, you know, the Russell 2000, which is a small cap index, has really, really underperformed the market, so to speak. I think it's actually negative for the year. We can look at the chart later. But, you know, there's Disney came out with abysmal earnings, revenues down, Home Depot stock is up, but came out with really bad earnings. And you look at relative strength in companies like Deere, you know, the tractor company, they're at a multi-month low. So there's a lot of damage. And the only thing that's really propping the market up has been the big tech trade. And I certainly wouldn't go chasing it here. I think if we head into a recession latter part of this year, I think, you know, we potentially could have an opportunity to buy at lower prices or maybe give up some of those gains that we have had this year. It's been a tremendously difficult market unless you've been centered in big cap tech or, you know, in some of the major indexes. I mean, a balanced portfolio right now is relatively flat on the year, maybe up slightly, but everything else is getting crushed. And so it's been difficult from a client perspective, from an advisor perspective, it's just been very difficult to navigate.
Well, and we're going back. I mean, I've said this in the past few weeks, we're going back, you go back 2 years, we're flat.
Yeah, April 2021. You know, we haven't really moved anywhere. I mean, I can show you that on the chart as well. You know, just a big bell curve. And so where do we go from here? We're at some, you know, key technical levels. We had a little, maybe a false breakout to the upside. You know, we gave some of that back Friday, and I don't think we revisit. I think we're really in a trading channel, anywhere between 4,200 on the S&P and 3,900 on the S&P, and it's going to be real frustrating, kind of a sideways movement. You know, I think on the extreme, you're probably going to hit maybe 4,300, but I think that's going to be your opportunity to kind of take some profits off the table and just sit and wait. And sitting and waiting in an annuity or in, you know, a money market fund or a short-term treasury that's paying you 3-4%, what are annuity rates doing right now?
Well, and that's when you say annuities, you're, you know, the difference being, you know, annuity should be used for long-term goals, setting things in place for an extended period of time. I believe in like the treasuries of the money market are probably better for a safe haven that you, you know, if you're waiting out some market volatility and looking for better indicators, but annuities are still paying like super high quality AAA stuff, paying 4.5 to 4.75. And then you can get up to 5.25 and above if you're looking at A rated. But then again, you're talking about locking in for a 5, 7, 10 year period. And again, that should only be done, in my opinion, I think you'd agree, if you're setting up a long-term plan of some sort, doing income or required minimum distributions and things like that. So that's most of the people that we're working with on that.
I agree. Having that long-term perspective, Brian, and I know you really focus in on that with your clients, as do I, is, you know, we're not investing for next week or next month, not even next year. We're investing, you know, for the rest of your life. And so having a, you know, proper plan, income plan in place. And I knew that the annuities really provide that foundation of safety, a reasonable rate of return, and then an income stream that makes them really appealing in this type of a choppy market. Because nobody at 65 or 70 wants to give up 30% of their account value after working, you know, their whole entire career accumulating that.
No, that's absolutely true. And again, you know, I tell a lot of people that, well, we'll figure out what needs to go into your annuity, whether we're doing income or just stabilizing a portfolio, and then you got X amount left over. It doesn't mean you have to throw that into the market. You can still do, like you said, short-term treasuries, money market funds, stay liquid, and get ready to take advantage of, like you said, momentum buys or value buys, something like that, where it necessarily, if we're trading at that many times earnings right now, it just like you said, it kind of defies logic to some extent, right?
Even with rates being up, it's all about being a flight to safety. And these market cap weighted indexes are really skewed to those largest companies on the planet. So they get the flows increase their stock price, even though, I mean, you actually have a fundamentally slowing business in the largest company on earth, and that's Apple. It's slowing down. That business is slowing. And so what's their, second or third act? You never know. I mean, I was on a call the other day and he was talking about the valuations. And valuations, you know, really do matter in this market. Look at a company like NVIDIA. The stock in January was like $110. And all they started doing was talking about AI. You got this huge AI boom. And I know, Brian, if for your listeners, you had a terrific podcast on AI. Was it a week or two ago?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago. If anything, I went a little soft on it. But again, like I said to them, I was like, I like to look into the rabbit hole, but on this podcast, I'm not going to dive into it and start digging.
Yeah, I mean, NVIDIA is close to $300 now. That's like 180% increase. I listen to a lot of earnings calls for a lot of these big companies. And if they're in technology, the instances where the management companies are referencing the words AI or artificial intelligence or language learning models, I've never heard it before. And the whole ChatGPT revolution, and it's going to have an impact. It'll probably be another bubble. It's the flavor of the month, just like pharmaceuticals were 3 years ago, just like Zoom was 3 years ago, just like marijuana stocks or cannabis stocks were. We go through these booms and busts and these cycles. Yeah, there are going to be some AI companies that do tremendously well. There's going to be some AI that fundamentally changes our life over the course of time with some of the big companies. And there's probably some companies that aren't even around right now that will displace some of the bigger players out there because of AI and what it potentially could do down the road in not only in healthcare, but in business and other areas of life. But it's definitely... It's kind of like the Bitcoin again, you know, the Bitcoin cryptocurrency. It's a frenzy. It's a frenzy. You know, it's like anything, you know, what goes up will eventually come down, you know, kind of a blowout fashion. So are we creating a bubble in AI? I probably think so. But, you know, how it'll play out, be proven wrong many, many times. And then eventually I'll be right down the line.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I wrote and recorded that 3 weeks ago, came out 2 weeks ago or thereabouts. And I felt like I was a few months late because I've been thinking about it for a while. When I recorded that, the week leading up to that, there was an article about AI in every publication. And then right after it went out, it almost seemed like perfect timing because then, I mean, I looked at a few places, you know, you look at the New York Times and Bloomberg, give you a pretty good idea, and then just the major news sources. And I can't stand the news, but I feel like I got to keep an eye on what's out there. I mean, the week after I did that podcast, I was like, man, like it was the full, like front cover of every website publication. And it's just kind of, it's ramping up and it's going to move. I think it's going to move faster than anything else we've ever seen.
Yeah, I do believe that. But you have to think about it. And, you know, we always talk about, I have a friend that works in technology. She works for a company that, you know, they have an AI product that does contract lifecycle management, call it CLM. And it's actually where AI can go in and detect changes and things. But all of that's got to be programmed by individuals. It's not like, you remember the old movie War Games? One of my all-time favorites, Matthew Broderick. Remember that movie?
This is not the first time I've said this when you asked me about a movie, but no, I've not seen that one.
An early 1980s movie. It was Matthew Broderick. He hacked into, they called it the Whopper computer. It was a war game simulator, and it was basically in the Colorado NORAD facility. And he hacks into it, and he initiates a countdown to global thermal nuclear war. And the computer, they called it the Whopper, but the programmer of the computer named it Joshua after his son. And so they were doing simulations of, you know, nuclear warfare, Cold War stuff in between Russia and the U.S. and survivability. And the computer was learning from itself. I highly recommend it. It's one of my all-time favorites. Just a great, you know, early 80s flick with, you know, Ferris Bueller, Matthew Broderick.
Okay. If anybody else has seen that, then just shoot a comment. Let me know what you think. Yeah. If you agree with Ballmer or not. And I just call it more foreshadowing by Hollywood. Honestly, it's like, oh, 40 years ago, they had this movie come out that, oh, and all of a sudden, it's like the Terminator, right?
Oh, yeah. Same thing, man. Wondering when somebody's going to, you know, show up at my doorstep from the future.
Anyway, all right. So we're rolling along right here, and I wouldn't say we're running out of time because we don't have a time limit. But if you want to share some charts and do a bit of analysis, we probably wrap this thing up, buddy. Not to push you out, but you know, you and I, we could BS all day long, right?
That's right. That's right. Ah, we have fun. Let's.
Yeah. No, exactly. And you, yeah, but you're at risk of some rugrats running through the door any minute now, right?
Yeah. Let me share this right here. This is a chart I actually did on the debt ceiling. Let me show you here. Are you able to see my screen?
Yeah, I can see it. It's a little small, but you know, I get the idea.
Yeah. This actually goes out, you know, this is the 2011 debt ceiling. We had a drawdown of about 21%. 2013 debt ceiling negotiations had a drawdown of, you know, roughly, let's just call it, I'm actually going to go to the daily here. We had a drawdown of about 5%. 2017 debt ceiling, we had a drawdown of about, it was actually flat if we want to take a look at it. Then we had a 2018, about a 10% drawdown. Obviously, late 2018, December, October, you know, into the end of the year, had a 21% drawdown when they tried to start raising rates. August 2021, we had another debt ceiling debate. Market was off about 6.25%. Then we had COVID, obviously. You had saw the huge ramp up drawdown in COVID and then the $7 trillion injection in liquidity into the markets, which created that super bubble. You know, December, you know, the market rally and the liquidity in the market really didn't have a material effect in between October and December 2021. And then now what you know, I have out here August as a debt ceiling scenario, but I really think, you know, we're coming up in June or, you know, June or July when they're really going to talk about it. So kind of here we are. This is the S&P 500. I'm just going to go to the SPY. This is the SPY, which is the ETF for the S&P 500. We kind of had a breakout above this, let's just call it this line right here.
What's your red line?
My red line here was the former resistance area. So you had a top here. I'm just going to focus in on here. You had a lot of traffic right here where you had a top. And you have a top going back to February. Then you traded off into March. You kind of have rallied the market back up. Kind of really over the last, several weeks, we had a really tight wedge forming. And when I say a wedge, I'll just, you know, we'll just put it like a wedge would look like this. It kind of had this wedge in here. And then you had a breakout. And I'm just going to go in and I'm just going to get rid of that. So you had this breakout. So you had this kind of declining wedge here. You had some support here. Here's the 200-day moving average, this red line. Here's the 20-day moving average. I always caution people, the 20-day moving average really acts as a rubber band. And so I would say, you know, you kind of peaked above this high here. You had some resistance here. You kind of broke out above that, but then we had a sell-off on Friday. I'm going to say that the market may, you know, want to come down and revisit this level, which would kind of put us back down in that range. But, you know, you're really looking at, if I can draw it for you, we kind of have this trading channel right here. Can you see that okay? This kind of trading channel?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, so we kind of peaked up above that. Our next real level of resistance here is at 431, which is 4310 on the S&P 500. Really want to kind of keep an eye out for that. But ultimately, I do think that that's probably going to be as high as we're going to get because we just have too many headwinds in the market. We can kind of look at the Q, the NASDAQ 100. You know, a lot of damage going down back into, you know, let's just call it December. You had some lows here. You've had a really nice rally up. And this, a lot of this has to do with technology just continuing to drive higher. But you do have a huge resistance area right here. And then you have a huge resistance area right here as well. So, you know, you may get up to these areas, but I don't think we're going back to all-time highs. I do think we're going to be in this range from here to here. I wish I could draw that better for you. It's going to kind of look like this. I would assume that we're going to have this trade back down, but this kind of channel. And if you really want to kind of go back, you know, what is that? February of 2021, the market has gone nowhere. You've just had this, you know, you had this blow off top. You had an attempt at a rally, didn't work. You know, you had obviously revisited the lows. You had a low, you know, almost three times down here, October, November, early January, kind of off to the races. Stocks had really gotten beat up. I think, you know, NVIDIA, Facebook, I mean, all of those companies were down 50 to 70%. If you go back to the S&P 500, I mean, it's really, really the same thing. If you look at it, where do we go back to? Let's just go here.
I want you to revisit that blowout top that you talked about, because I'm looking through our podcast. If I'm not mistaken, what was that date range on that, John? I know you know that off the top of your head.
The date range. Oh, for the blow off top?
Yeah.
On the QQQ? I mean, let's just look at it.
Was it around January 13th, 2022?
Yeah. I mean,
do you remember what happened on that day?
No.
That's when we released a podcast with Mr. John Ballmer that question, is a market correction coming?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We did do that.
We're a year and a half later. Look at us. Yeah.
You know, we did call out a topping pattern, particularly in the IWM. I was saying that we recognize a topping pattern in the IWM, which is the Russell 2000. Just go to it here. We had a topping pattern right here. Our topping pattern was, what was this? Below 210 was kind of my call. Below 210 on the IWM. And obviously, I'm not doing a very good job at drawing this chart. But you can kind of see here, if I just drop in this line at 210, you know, we've had some pretty significant damage. And now we're in just a sideways channel below that 210. You saw that topping pattern blow off top right here. And this is, you know, for folks in the audience, this is like a blow off top here. This isn't the small caps. So if you look at small and mid caps, obviously they outperform the broad market, but they tend to be a lot more volatile, bigger drawdowns. This is where a lot of your, I mean, this is represents 2,000 companies. So anything outside of your S&P 500, this are, you know, your small, medium-sized businesses. I don't know what revenues on these are, but you can kind of see this channel here. And I think what, you know, when we did talk, you know, January, I said below 210 on the S&P, or I'm sorry, on the IWM, the Russell was our kind of our inflection point, kind of sell and get out. Obviously had a pretty hard fall, real nice rally up to that 210 area, and then just continued to fail. And we've had multiple failures here. We've kind of just been in this training range. Pretty astonishing. But going back to, you're going back to April of 2021. You've been in a sideways market. We'll see where things go from here. You want to look at anything else?
No, I mean, I think that's probably good for now, but always good to kind of take a look back and see where we are.
Yeah.
You know, I get a lot of heat because index annuities haven't gone anywhere in 2 years. And it's like, well, where is it supposed to come from?
Let me show you this. This is NVIDIA. This was here. This is November 2021. That company, had you held it, and people always say, well, why don't I own it? Had you held it, you would have had to hold through a 68% drawdown on that stock. Nobody's holding that. Yeah, 68% drawdown. Consequently, on the other side, and I hold no position in this stock. I traded it in my account. I obviously haven't caught huge moves. No one's going to ever hit the top. No one's ever going to hit the bottom. But if let's say you did buy it at the bottom, you're at 184% move coming up into some all-time highs in a market that potentially could be decelerating. You know, who knows? These are stories that coulda, shoulda, woulda. Nobody's going to hold through that, you know, 70%+ drawdown or that 68%+ drawdown. Nobody's going to hit the bottom. Nobody's going to hold it to the top because you had a lot of times in between here where this stock, you know, it fell precipitously, you know, 230 to 204. That's a pretty huge drop. This drop here, you know, 188 to back down to 138. Those are things that, you know, your audience is going to want to kind of look at. And trading stocks is not something I ever recommend unless you know exactly what you're doing. As an advisor, I always appreciate working with guys like you, Brian, because you bring a lot more perspective into the long-term planning and the diversification that we can provide our clients, is having that long-term plan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to be in the market, you got to have, again, that's all I talk about. I'm not, and you know this, I mean, you and I struck up a relationship and have a good working relationship because of it. You know, you see the value in my side, I see the value in yours, and we're not sitting here on either side of it pounding the drum for one or the other. It's a combination of the two, and that's what makes a retirement plan work. So that's why we continue to do this, and that's why your updates are helpful, you know, because I think it needs to be out there. And a lot of guys, what they don't realize the value in you is you have your own perspective. Like this is what you come up, the analysis you do on your own. And a lot of the people you work with out there are listening to analysts, or they get an order sheet from executive level at a management company saying, this is what you need to be telling people and doing that. I don't let anybody tell me what to do. I know you don't. And I think that's why it's a good fit. So,
yeah. I mean, to that point, Brian, as independent advisors, we work for our clients. You know, I act as both fiduciary and as broker when it's appropriate. One size just doesn't fit all. But I, you know, I used to work for a big wirehouse firm. And when I say wirehouse, I mean, you know, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, UBS, some of those, you know, Wells Fargo advisors. I worked for one of those firms. Every week we had actually and we did a lot of fixed income trading. So we traded a lot of bonds. And every week we had new inventory. And our job as the salespeople, as brokers, was to get that inventory off of our balance sheet and onto our clients, whether it was good for them or not. And I had a real problem with that. So that's why I left the business for a while, went on the institutional side, managed money institutionally. And then when I decided to come back and work with individual clients on retirement planning, you know, it's really kind of ingrained in my DNA to actually do what's right for the client. And I think that's what you and I have most in common, you know, besides that we have a lot of fun outside of the office and we've struck up a good friendship. But I think, you know, the common ground that we have for clients is, you know, really doing the right thing and making sure that they succeed. And with their success, you know, comes a little bit of our success as well. I think that's why we do this.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We have the same philosophy, just different sides of the business. The two have to work together. Man, thank you so much for being here. We got a lot of content on this, gives a lot of people a lot of things to chew on. I want to remind everyone, John's not here to market or advertise for other things. So please don't search him out and bug him. If you want to talk to him, you come through me. I appreciate what you're doing because it breaks up the information and gives people the full perspective on retirement planning. Obviously, there are other things we can do with, you know, planning with IRAs and RMDs and all the rules that go into it and trusts and estates and all that stuff. So this is not all in one. Everybody's different. But again, John, thank you for joining me this episode. And we're going to have you back real soon. Okay.
Brian, thanks for having me. Hope you have a great week.
All right, we'll do it. And everyone, that's going to wrap it up. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, or otherwise. Share it with your friends, the podcast, or the YouTube channel. Get it out to as many people as you can. I think we're doing a good thing here. Our intention, like John said, is to help people. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 89. I will see you next week with a new topic. Have a great day. Okay, bye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with a qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.